It was not quite dark the next evening when we stood before the entrance to Carfax's estate. Even though Van Helsing had not included bullets among the weapons he considered effective against our singular foe, Holmes had insisted we each carry a revolver. I felt as if I were being watched. The feeling increased as we drew near the building, until by the time we were standing before the iron-banded door, I was obsessed with the certainty that our every move was under the scrutiny of unseen eyes. Holmes succeeded in unlocking the door with the second key he tried, and with an effort, for the door was thick and heavy, we pushed it open.
That's done it, I'm afraid. Step carefully, Watson. He knows we are here now.
What on earth is that foul smell?
Quiet. We'll explore down that flight of steps. As I thought, the chapel.
That stench, it comes from here.
Raise your lantern. Do you see, Watson?
Boxes. Coffin-shed boxes.
And look. Filled with earth.
Does that...
Wait. There are only 29. We must conclude that...
Shh. What is it?
There. Behind you.
What? There! There was someone in the doorway. For a brief second, I'd swear it.
Quick! After him!
No! Back, Watson! Back!
What is it?
Rats! Ah! Thousands of rats! Use your revolver, man. Clear the passage and run, for the love of God, run!
Come, Watson. Let's get away from this place as quickly as we can.
Ghastly beasts.
Ghastly indeed. And for a purpose. That little demonstration was designed to frighten us off, with great success. Even so, we've won a victory.
In what way? We've done nothing.
Oh, on the contrary, we have determined that the Count has other hiding places. Otherwise, we would have found all 50 boxes of earth in the chapel.
And how does that help us?
Quick, into the bushes.
Van Helsing.
I dare say that the professor and his companions are in for a reception much like the one given to us. Wait until they're inside, and then we shall make our way home to Baker Street and a large whiskey apiece. You see, Watson, it is now that the true detective work begins. We know that Dracula has other lairs, and it's up to us to find them. Once we have accomplished this, it should be a simple matter to dispose of his precious Transylvanian soil, thus narrowing his opportunities of exploiting this country of ours.
And if we should find the fiend himself?
Then we must destroy him before he can spread his vampire pestilence throughout the empire. Mm-hmm. We have no other choice.
That's odd. I heard no footsteps on the stairs.
Come in.
Good God.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Welcome, Count Dracula.
He was dressed entirely in black, his only concession to colour being the silver crook of a massive black cane he carried in one talon-like hand. His face was elongated and high-browed, tilted upwards in the manner of a member of a long and noble line, and pale almost to the point of translucence. His eyes glowed like smouldering embers beneath a pair of brows so wild and bushy that they almost met above the arch of his nose. The unruly shock of hair that topped his high-domed head was jet black, with a single streak of steely grey shooting up from the centre of the ragged widow's peak. But it was his teeth, the dagger-sharp canine teeth peering out between bright red lips, that held my attention. They were the fangs of a predator.
Yes, I am Dracula. But how...
That mirror on the wall. It reflects only an open door.
Mirrors. I detest mirrors. But you are indeed observant, and I am honored to make your acquaintance, sir. Even in the country of my birth, we have been fortunate enough to read of your marvelous exploits against the English criminal.
No, you flatter me, Count. Your reputation precedes you as well. Perhaps you would care to join my colleague and myself in some whiskey. What's in a glass?
Thank you. I do not drink alcoholic beverages. The hours of the night are few, and I have much to do before morning. I will state my business, and then you will be rid of me.
Would that were true, Count Dracula?
You are an outspoken man, Mr. Holmes. In my country, that is a dangerous trait. I advise you to guard your tongue in my presence.
My dear Count, we are both too old to waste time upon these pleasantries. How may I be of service to you?
Earlier this evening, you paid a visit to my home. I would like to know why.
Oh, I think we both know the answer to that question.
So we do. When I learned that it was you who had invaded my Purfleet residence, I realized that my activities in England had attracted your professional interest, an interest which I can hardly afford at this stage of my operations. I am here to ask you to abandon your investigations before they do real harm.
If that is your purpose, then I'm afraid that you have come here for nothing.
I am a wealthy man, Mr. Holmes. I promise you that you will not regret having granted me this one favor. I urge you to consider what I ask. You think that you have faced all the terrors that the world has to offer, Mr. Holmes, but you have barely scratched the surface. Jonathan Harker was driven mad by but a few of the myriad forces that are mine to command. He was fortunate. Even as we stand here, those forces are gathering, responding to my unspoken instructions, with but one purpose in mind, to destroy all obstacles which stand in my path. From icy graves they arise, from gallows and tombs, for all that die are my agents. They are the army of the dead. How may one mortal expect to triumph over such an enemy?
Your tales are wasted on me, Count Dracula. I am no more frightened by them than I was by your rats.
The rats were a warning. I assure you that when I decide to act in earnest, you will not escape.
I've heard enough. You may show our visit to the door, Watson.
That will not be necessary. There are far worse things than death, Mr. Holmes. Persist, and I promise that you will find out what I mean.
Did you notice the cold, Watson?
Yeah.
I thought the same thing the moment we entered Carfax. It is the miasma that surrounds Count Dracula. There. Grows warmer now that he has left. A most informative confrontation. What do you suppose he thought to accomplish by coming here?
I should think that's obvious. He hoped to persuade you to stop interfering with his plans. When bribery failed, he resorted to threats.
No, Watson. Dracula had no intention of inducing me to leave him alone. That was merely his excuse to come here and observe his enemy in his natural habitat. Now, I must dispatch some telegrams to Whitby. Within a few hours, I should be able to find out where the remainder of the 50 boxes were sent. Where they are, Dracula cannot be far away.
In spite of the cavalier fashion in which my friend had dismissed the fiend's visit, it was obvious that the episode had unnerved him. Twice I awoke during the night to hear the melancholy strains of Holmes's violin, a sure sign that he was too preoccupied with the problem at hand to sleep. It was during these periods that I feared most for my friend's health. For though I had succeeded in curing him of the terrifying addiction which had once threatened to destroy that wonderful brain, I knew the temptation was still there. The next morning, his spirits seemed restored, and these improved still further upon the arrival of a series of telegrams.
Success, Watson! I have learned all of Dracula's hiding places in London.
I am delighted to hear it.
On August the 10th, 50 boxes of earth were put on a train for London and upon arrival placed in 4 separate locations according to instructions. Among these locations was Carfax Estate.
We will, I assume, visit each of the places mentioned?
On the contrary, we will do nothing.
Nothing?
Well, we'd only be covering territory that's already been covered. My informants tell me that another gentleman has also been making inquiries. I can only assume that this was Jonathan Harker. No doubt he's already imparted the information to Van Helsing, and they are even now in the process of destroying Dracula's places of rest. Why gild the lily?
Then Dracula is finished?
Oh, I doubt that, Watson. I doubt that very much.
I fail to understand you, Holmes. You begin by counselling inaction, and then you tell me that England is still at the mercy of this hideous creature. I've never known you to be so apathetic in the face of such a crisis. I see no humour in the situation.
Oh, I'm sorry, my dear fellow. I've done you a great injustice. Now, the Count is growing nervous. Why else would he have visited me here yesterday evening and tried to buy me off? It was an act of desperation, and you and I both know that desperate men make mistakes. That is what I meant when I suggested that we do nothing. I should have made clear the fact that we will be waiting.
Waiting? For what?
For Count Dracula to make his first mistake. I assure you, Watson, it will be his last as well.
I have never known my friend Sherlock Holmes to be more reclusive and difficult to talk to than he was during the opening days of October 1890. As hour followed hour with no news that would give us a clue to the progress of Count Dracula's activities, the detective withdrew into a shell of secrecy and quiet that even I could not hope to crack. It was not until 4 o'clock on the afternoon of the 3rd, when a messenger appeared at our door with a note addressed to him, that Holmes so far unbent as to speak to me in words of more than a single syllable.
It's from Inspector Lestrade. Hmm? He wishes to see me. Now get on your coat, Watson. This could be the news for which we've been waiting.
Oh, where are we headed?
To the Whitechapel mortuary, where the inspector awaits us.
I'm glad you could make it, Mr. Holmes. This is a most serious business we are involved in today.
What's happened?
The Ripper is up to his old tricks.
A mistake, certainly.
Well, I wish it was, Dr. Watson. But the evidence is too conclusive.
Where is the victim?
Under the sheet, over there. I warn you, it's not a pleasant sight.
Replace the sheet. Who was she?
A prostitute by the name of Rachel North. A policeman found her slumped inside a doorway in the next street from here at 3 o'clock this morning. She'd been dead at least an hour by then.
And what makes you think that this is the work of Jack the Ripper?
Who but old Leather Apron himself would slash an inoffensive prostitute's throat and leave her to drown in her own blood?
Her throat was more than slashed, Inspector. It was torn right out.
And how do you explain the absence of any other wounds on her body? Where is the skillful dissection on which the Ripper prides himself?
Well, I imagine he was interrupted before he could finish.
It won't stand up. Why was the body not found until 3 o'clock this morning if the culprit was surprised in the act an hour before? As for your theory that she drowned in her own blood, how can you reconcile that with the fact that there is very little blood to be found either around the wound or on the corpse? Or has the Ripper found a new souvenir to take home with him?
I suppose you have a theory that will cover all the facts?
I have a theory, but I doubt very strongly that you will believe it. Let us be off, Watson. It's growing dark and our time is short.
You don't mean to say that you're giving up on the case?
I mean to say that we are leaving. My advice to you, Inspector, is to abandon any preconceptions you may have formed regarding the Ripper's involvement in this crime. We stalk a far more dangerous foe.
And my advice to you, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, is to keep your advice to yourself. The Yard is quite capable of apprehending its criminals without your help. I invited you in today and merely because I knew that this is the sort of thing that interests you.
Lestrade never ceases to astound me. Each time I see him, he's grown more stubborn and unimaginative than he was the time before.
Do you think it was Dracula who mutilated that poor woman?
Who else? It was unlike him, however, to have made such an untidy job of it. I can only think that he's desperate and in a hurry. Otherwise, he'd have taken pains to see that the body was never found. I think, Watson, that Dracula is preparing to leave.
Leave? For where?
I cannot say. Transylvania, perhaps.
It would seem a wise choice under the circumstances.
And yet, it is not like the Count to give up so easily. He may alter his plans, but it's doubtful that he would reverse them simply because they're known to his enemies. No, Watson, I fear that whatever Dracula's next step may be, it will not be surrender.
Well, as long as we're on the subject of the next step, what form will our own take?
Tell me, Doctor, why do you suppose our quarry chose Whitechapel as a place to strike when he had all of London from which to choose?
Perhaps because here the prey is easiest?
Perhaps, but does the lion ever hunt for food beyond the immediate vicinity of his home?
No, never. Do you think that...
Considering Dracula's preference for long-abandoned buildings, we should have little difficulty in locating a suitable place within a half-mile radius. There is a building nearby which once sheltered a slaughterhouse, but which has been empty for some time. That would, indeed, make a suitable hiding place for such a murderer. Come, Watson. It's getting dark. There's no time to waste. Look, Watson. The entrance to the slaughterhouse. It's open. He's here, I'm certain. Now, quietly now.
Right.
Those men are... Yes. It's one of the boxes from the ship. They're loading it onto that wagon. The Count is preparing for his departure.
Any sign of him?
No. He... Wait.
It's all ready.
Yes, sir.
Good. Who's that over there?
Good evening, Count Dracula.
Fools! What brainless idiots you are to have come all this way to die!
Hollow words, Count. Instruct your servants to unload the box.
No!
What?
Stop! Watson, Watson, look out! He'll run you down! Watson, Watson, are you all right?
He's escaped, Holmes.
Oh, I would rather have him escape 100 times than have you harmed once, dear friend. But cease worrying. We'll find him soon enough.
Indeed, and how do you propose to do that?
Do you recall the affair of Jonathan Small and his diminutive partner and how we tracked them through London's busy streets?
Toby!
A dog with a nose for criminals. He should have little trouble following the path of so clumsy a mode of transportation as a wagon.
Yet, I seem to recall that Small's accomplice had stepped in some creosote, which allowed the dog to sniff the two of them out. How do you expect Toby to differentiate between the tracks left by the wagon and those of the thousands of other vehicles which pass along the streets?
Oh, come now, Watson. Have you forgotten where we are?
No, a slaughterhouse, but...
Are you telling me that any self-respecting dog would find it difficult to track down a wagon whose wheels have rolled over ground rich in blood and entrails?
Holmes, you're a genius.
Do you feel up to collecting Toby from his owner and bringing him here?
Ready and willing, Holmes.
We must have made quite a sight for the early evening strollers in Whitechapel. One man being pulled along by a whooping mongrel, while another hurried along in their wake, puffing and holding onto his hat with one hand. I grew uneasy as we emerged from the twisting dark alleys of the East End and entered more familiar surroundings. And how can I describe the cold sensation that began to gnaw at my heart when the trail veered towards my own neighborhood? I told myself that my fears were groundless, that it was most likely nearby Paddington Station to which the fiend was heading, there to book passage elsewhere. We had gone scarcely another 100 yards... when my worst apprehensions were realized. With a mighty lunge, the dog tore off the leash from my friend's grip and bounded up the stairs of my own building to where the front door stood halfway open. He disappeared inside, his triumphant bark ceasing suddenly inside the entrance. We followed him in and came across the dog, crouched on the linoleum with his head down and his tail tucked between his legs. At first I could see no reason for this curious behavior, but slowly I became aware of the strange and terrible aura that filled the hall. It was the unearthly chill that Count Dracula took with him from the grave.
He's been here, Holmes!
Oh, sir! Sir! Is it you?
Who's that?
It's Mrs. Barton, sir, from next door.
Where's my wife, Mrs. Barton? What's happened?
Oh, gently, Watson, gently. There, Mrs. Barton. There's nothing to be afraid of.
Sir.
Tell us what happened.
I was visiting Mrs. Watson, sir. She was feeling poorly and I was giving her tea. And then the door bursts open and in he comes. tall he was, all dressed in black with eyes blazing red as cups.
Go on.
Mrs. Watson was in her robe and nightgown. She gathers them round her and demands to know who he is and what he's doing here. "You are Mary Watson," he says. "I am," says she. "My time is short and I have a long journey ahead of me," he says. "Come." He swung her up in his arms and he carried her, kicking and screaming she was, to the door. There he stops and looks back at me. He had the devil's own eyes. They burned like all the fires of hell were behind them. I thought it was over for me. Mrs. Watson had fainted and he held her like a rag doll. Then he said, "Inform the doctor that no harm will befall his wife if he and his friend do not follow." Then he ups and vanishes into the fog at the top of the steps.
Oh, God.
I was scared stiff he'd come back for me, so I ran and hid myself in the closet. When I heard the door opening, I was sure he'd come back for me, but then I heard your voice, Dr. Watson, and I'd come down.
Now, one more question, Mrs. Barton. Yes. Did he say anything about where he was going?
No, sir. But after he left, I thought I heard the wheels of a wagon or a four-wheeler going off in the direction of King's Cross.
I see. Thank you, Mrs. Barton. You have been most helpful. Now, you'd better go home now. You will be quite safe.
Thank you, sir.
He has her. The fiend has my wife.
It is my belief that the Count is a man of his word. I have little doubt he will release Mrs. Watson unharmed if we do not follow.
And then what? Whose wife will be his next victim? We cannot afford to let this vile thing remain on the face of the earth, Holmes, no matter what the cost.
Even at the risk of your wife's soul?
Even so.
Good fellow. How can I help but take you for granted when your character is so consistently strong? We will return Toby to his owner and then be off to King's Cross Station. This tale will have a happy ending yet.
The third clerk we talked to at King's Cross remembered having sold a ticket to Whitby to a tall, dark man, but expressed no recollection of a woman answering to Mary's description in his company. He did recall, however, that the passenger had an oblong box with him which was loaded into the guard's van and that it took three men to lift it. He told us the next train to Whitby was not until 6 o'clock the following morning.
Too late. It's as I thought. He has her shut up in the box.
What now? It's 10 o'clock at night. The villain has a head start on us and we have no way of following.
On the contrary, Watson. I know of a certain coachman not far from here who can match the fastest train on the isle. With his help, we may be in Whitby in time to apprehend Dracula before he leaves the country.
I shall not attempt to describe the harrowing journey we took between London and Whitby, other than to say that it aged me considerably. All that night and throughout the next day we travelled, stopping only three times to change horses. But we were hampered by thick fog, and when we finally arrived at midnight on October the 4th, we knew it had all been to no avail. The train had arrived hours before us.
Do not be depressed, Watson. I think I know where our quarry went from here. Driver, to the shipping offices at the docks. Someone there should remember a man of Dracula's description, booking passage for himself and a large box of earth.
We were in luck. The clerk at the first shipping office we went into had served a man answering to Dracula's description earlier that evening. He had booked a passage for himself and an oblong box on the Tsarina Catherine, a ship sailing for Varna on the Black Sea at 8 the following night. Varna, the Demeter's port of departure. We lost no time in making for the dockside, and soon came across one of the men who had helped Dracula. A surly fellow.
Yes, I remember him. He wanted a box loaded onto the Catherine. Offered to pay well, he did. But first, he wanted the contents transferred to an empty crate that was lying on the dock.
What?
And the box filled with sand from the beach. By the time I got back with the sand, the crate was gone. And when the box was filled, he told me to load it onto the Catherine.
So, the box on the Catherine is a decoy.
What sort of a creature are you to help another in the abduction of an innocent woman for a mere piece of gold?
What kind of bilge is that? There wasn't no woman with him, abducted or otherwise.
And where is this crate you mentioned?
Oh, search me. Like I told you, it was gone when I got back with the sand.
What ships have left this harbour within the last hour?
Two, I think. I heard a steamer blowing its whistle half an hour ago, and I hoped an American clipper cast off a bit before that. They must both have been overdue, else they wouldn't have left till the fog lifted.
What do you know of these vessels?
Well, the steamer would be the King Henry, bound for Australia. The other's the Baltimore, trader out of Boston.
Where is my wife?
The mesmeric powers of the vampire are nearly without limit, as you know only too well, Watson. It is likely that Dracula commanded her to remain out of sight until he had concluded his business. Where can we hire a motor launch?
Who are you? What do you want about? I've a good mind to call for a coast guard, have you both arrested. Who is this bloke you're after? What's he to do with you?
I will explain. My name is Sherlock Holmes, and my companion...
You're Sherlock Holmes?
That is correct.
Oh, I've been waiting a long time to meet you, Mr. Holmes. My name's Ned Bridger. Well, surely you remember my brother Morgan, who was skipper of the Alicia, when it sailed into that patch of fog in the Channel 10 years ago.
Your gratitude is misplaced, I fear. The disappearance of the Alicia is one problem I was never able to solve.
But you proved from a brother's record that whatever happened to that ship couldn't have been due to any error on his part, as the authorities said. For that, I'll always be indebted to you, Mr. Holmes.
You're too kind. At present, however, we are in need of a boat.
Well, I know of a steam launch moored near here. The owner would never be the wiser if we borrowed it.
Excellent. Now, if you would kindly release your grip upon my hand and lead us to the vessel in question, we can explain the reason for our being here and the villain we are after. Make haste, my dear fellow. The Baltimore has too much of a head start upon us already.
Follow me.
Why not the King Henry, Holmes?
Now, the distance to Australia is too great. Considering Dracula's appetite, he would run out of crew members long before he reached the port. No, Watson, he is on his way to the conquest of the United States of America, and the arrangement involving the Tsarina Catherine was merely part of an elaborate device to throw us off the track.
We drew a sketchy account for Ned Bridger of our hunt for Count Dracula, leaving out the incredible fact of his vampire existence and concentrating on his role of murderer and kidnapper. By the end of it, that worthy seaman was willing to do all he could to help us. The diminutive steamer proved to have ample fuel aboard, and Ned Bridger succeeded in getting the engine into operation. At Holmes's insistence, I took control of the tiller while he stood in the bow. We eased out into the gloom of the harbour. The fog, which had parted sluggishly to allow us entrance, soon closed in about us, until we seemed to be floating through eternal night. I was reminded of Van Helsing's claim that the vampire was capable of controlling the weather within his immediate vicinity. If this was so, then we were closer to our quarry than I had dared hope.
Starboard a bit on that rudder, Doctor.
Starboard it is.
If our bird expects to reach the open sea, he's got to miss that reef first.
Holmes, there it is, on the port bow.
That's the light on their forecastle.
Full speed ahead, Bridger. Overtake her.
I'll do what I can, but if we fetch up on that reef, it's a watery grave for us all.
And it's getting away.
He spotted us, blast it. The captain and crew must be under his control. More speed, Bridger. Throw on more fuel.
Impossible. The boiler's about to go up like a Roman candle as it is.
More speed, I say.
All right. Beat to an L.
This is Dracula's work. He's using the weather to elude us.
The boiler's going to blow!
Can you swim to the shore from here?
I'll swim further!
Then let me have the throttle and you jump overboard. Watson and I will take it from here.
This boat is my responsibility. I'll not turn it over to any land lover.
Don't be a fool, Bridger! You have nothing to gain by these heroics.
Sorry, mister, I can't hear you!
Holmes, look! The Baltimore's turning. It's heading straight for the shore.
It's heading straight for the reef as well.
Dracula must be unaware of its existence.
Oh, Mary. Holmes, look. On the deck of the Baltimore, there are men leaping into the sea.
Yes, no doubt they prefer the ocean to the reef.
The boiler's going!
Into the water, Watson.
No, Holmes.
And
stay
you
with...
go.
The water was cold as death, but that was hardly my first concern. There was a tremendous explosion, and the harbour was thrown into blazing brightness. Debris of the steam launch splashed down around me. My first thought was of Holmes. Had he, too, succeeded in quitting the craft before the boiler burst?
Holmes! Holmes!
There was no reply, just the thunder and pouring rain. This, then, was how it ended. All the deduction, all the hours spent poring over clues and following the trails left by criminals throughout England and the continent, all the telegrams from the powerful and the destitute requesting aid in solving mysteries of the most baffling nature, all had come to nothing more than an icy grave in a remote English harbour. It was with lead in my heart that I began swimming towards the shore. And then I saw it. The Baltimore, perched not 20 feet away from me. There was a great gaping hole in the bow where it had struck the reef close to the shore, but other than that, the vessel appeared to be unharmed. My relief upon spotting the evidence that my wife may not have perished was tempered by a sobering thought. Where was Dracula? In the next instant, my question was answered, for a jagged streak of lightning illuminated the scene, and I saw the fiend standing on the forecastle, holding the limp form of my beloved Mary. Whether she was alive or dead was something I could not tell at that distance. For a long moment, we were motionless, glaring at each other across the score of feet that separated us. Then Dracula turned and disappeared into the captain's cabin. What I had been challenged to follow was a certainty. I felt a chill that had nothing to do with the temperature or my soaked condition. Sherlock Holmes was dead, and I was alone against Count Dracula. I struck out towards the beached vessel in search of the best way to board her without being observed by the vampire, and had waded stealthily into the shadows on the clipper's far side, when suddenly a hand was clapped firmly over my mouth.
The slightest sound would prove disastrous to our plans.
Holmes! What miracle is this? How is it that you survived that terrible explosion?
Surviving that terrible explosion was not as difficult as you might think, for the simple reason that I was not there when it occurred. I jumped.
Wonderful. But where's Bridger? Is he with you?
No, Watson. He is not.
Do you mean?
I jumped with Bridger's assurance that he would be right behind me. Whether he was telling the truth or not is a moot point, since the boiler blew just as I hit the water. He did not have time to jump.
He was a brave man.
And it's up to us to see that he did not die in vain. You saw Dracula a few minutes ago?
Yes. He has Mary with him.
So I observed. Under the Count's manipulation, she appears to have exchanged the role of hostage for another one as bait. I am dead, or so he thinks. And he has so far underestimated your intelligence as to believe he can lure you into a trap. You will, of course, not disappoint him.
What do you mean?
I will give you 5 minutes. Enter the hold through the aperture in the bow. Dracula will not be expecting that. It's too obvious. Wait until you hear 2 gunshots outside. Ascend to the deck and make your way to the captain's cabin, where you will find your wife waiting for you. When you have her, shout it out for all the world to hear. Then make for the shore as fast as possible. I don't have to remind you that Mrs. Watson's life, as well as your own, depends upon the speed you will be making.
And what will you be doing all this time?
I am going to create a diversion.
You've charted yourself a dangerous course.
1 hour at sea and already your speech is becoming nautical. But speed is vital, Watson. We've wasted one of your allotted 5 minutes already.
I climbed through the hole in the clipper's bow and picked my way down the tilted deck towards the wooden ladder that led into the open, there to await Holmes's signal. As soon as I heard the shots, I lost no time in clambering up the ladder. My alacrity nearly cost me my life. No sooner had I reached the top deck than I felt a sudden chill. Immediately, I dived for the nearest shadow. From between the captain's cabin and the starboard railing, I saw a black-cloaked figure hasten past within touching distance of my hand. I ducked in through the doorway of the cabin as soon as Dracula's back was towards me and peered anxiously through the gloom. There was Mary. She looked very frail indeed. Her blue eyes were wide, not with terror, as I had expected them to be, but with unseeing stupor. I recognized the signs of hypnosis. My first act was to examine her throat for punctures. There were none. Thanking God for delivering her from that horror, I gathered her into my arms and carried her to the deck. Dracula was speaking as I got to the door.
So you live still. Did you think I would go to my grave and leave you here to prey on whom you please?
Where is your companion?
I have her, Holmes.
What? Run, Watson, run!
No, I don't...
Fire your pitiable weapon, Sherlock Holmes. See what good it does you. Against a man who commanded armies hundreds of years before you were born. Run, Watson, as you value your life, run!
Well, Dr. Watson...
I...
look into my eyes, Dr. Watson. My eyes. You are unable to move, Dr. Watson. Unable to speak. You are the mine.
Huh? No!
Yes! Beware the sun, Count Dracula. Ah. It will sap your strength as surely as did the shears of Samson's Delilah. Witness its purifying rays. Soon they will reach the ship, and then your power will cease to be. That is when we shall destroy you. Ah. Ah. Are you all right, Watson?
Yes, I think so.
And your wife? Has he harmed her?
He's not had that chance, thanks to you. But she's in a trance and suffering from exposure.
Then we'll get her to a hospital as quickly as possible.
What about Dracula? Was that great wolf that leapt ashore really him?
It was.
You're not going to let him get away?
No, Watson. The Tsarina Catherine does not sail until 8 o'clock this evening. In the meantime, let us attend to your wife.
We carried her still fragile form along the reef to the shore, and thence to the local hospital. All day, we waited outside her room as she hovered precariously between life and death. It seemed an eternity. Towards evening, tired out by the previous night's exertions, I was dozing on a bench in the hospital corridor when Holmes nudged me to consciousness.
Watson?
Well, no.
What? I'm afraid I shall have to leave you for a while. Huh?
Are you not going to wait for word on Mary's condition?
The Tsarina Catherine sails at 8. It's now considerably after 7.
Oh, yes.
I have less than 45 minutes in which to return to the docks and settle the vampire's fate for good. I pray that Mrs. Watson will be out of danger by the time I return.
I'm going with you.
No. You would be worse than useless with your wife in her present condition. Besides, what will she think when she awakes and you are not there? No, Watson, no. You owe it to yourself to remain here. I will see you later.
Nurse, how's my wife?
She's resting peacefully. She's not out of danger yet, but the worst part of the crisis is over.
Oh, thank God. May I see her?
Very well, but only for a few minutes.
Thank you. Mary?
I knew it was you as soon as I heard your footsteps. I'm something of a detective myself, you see.
My dear.
You look as if you could use a bed yourself, Dr. Watson.
Dracula!
Do not fear. I have not come to do mischief.
Then why are you here? And where is Holmes?
Your friend, I suspect, is in the process of discovering that I am not on board the Tsarina Catherine. He will no doubt quickly piece together my movements since leaving and will soon be on his way here. My time grows short. My business will not take more than a moment.
And what is your business?
Curiosity, Dr. Watson.
Curiosity?
I can understand Professor Van Helsing's motives in wishing to destroy me. To Sherlock Holmes, I am a challenge, and I have learned from your accounts of his adventures that he cannot survive without such challenges. It is you, Doctor, whom I cannot comprehend. I am at a loss to explain your purpose in pursuing this dangerous path. I speak not of your wife's abduction, although why you should jeopardize her safety by continuing your pursuit is a problem in itself. But from the beginning, you have shown an ungovernable enthusiasm for this chase. Why? What spell has Sherlock Holmes placed on you that has made you his accomplice in this mad scheme? I have risked everything by coming here, and I must have an answer before I return to my homeland.
Sherlock Holmes is my friend.
That is your answer?
It is the only one I have.
I see. I must go. Farewell, Doctor!
What?
Where is he?
He dived out of the window, Holmes, and suddenly he became a great bat.
He's on his way back to the Tsarina Catherine, no doubt.
Your wife, Watson. Has he harmed her?
No, he didn't touch her.
What did he want?
He wanted to know why I should wish to aid you in your pursuit of him.
Oh. And did he receive an answer?
Yes.
Thank you, Watson.
Well, what about Dracula? Are we going after him?
No. His ship will have sailed by the time we reach the docks. What? The crew were making final preparations when I left. He will not touch ground again until he reaches Varna.
Well, what is stopping us from following him to Varna and resuming our pursuit?
I think, Watson, that we shall leave that task for Van Helsing and his friends. Our part in the drama ends here.
It is not like you to quit a case before it is finished, Holmes.
But it is finished. We have accomplished what we set out to do.
But what if Van Helsing is unable to trace Dracula back to his homeland? In a year's time, the fiend may try again.
Do not underestimate the professor. He is a relentless man. He and his companions will follow Dracula night and day, and they will not give up until they have sent the sanguinary count to the eternal rest that has been waiting for him for over 400 years. Our reward is the knowledge that it is we who put him on the defensive and rescued England from the vampire's clutches. I think that is enough for two middle-aged men. Don't you?
It was November, just over a month since we had driven the nightmare from our shores. I was sitting at my desk, my afternoon's work done, or so I thought.
Someone to see you, my dear.
Hmm?
Working late, Watson?
Oh, Holmes!
I'll leave you two men together.
My dear Holmes, you'll have a drink?
Oh, thank you, no, Watson. I have a hansom waiting outside. I merely stopped by to show you this telegram. Hmm?
All is well. He is dead. For services uninvited, gratitude. V.H. Varna.
V.H.? Van Helsing.
Oh!
It appears that Dracula's threat is ended. Reluctant though the professor's thanks seem, they are the mark of a proud man, and I should be glad to add his telegram to my collection of memorabilia.
I did not know that he was aware of our continued involvement in the affair.
And I told you before not to underestimate him. But I must go. I have a small matter awaiting my urgent attention.
Oh, well, could I...
No, my dear fellow. I wouldn't dream of taking you away from your practice so soon after the last time. Besides, the affair may prove dangerous, and your wife...
Oh, Mary will understand.
No, not when she is informed of who it is that has crossed my path yet again.
Who?
Can you not guess? One as evil and cunning in every respect as the fiend whose life we now know to be over.
Not?
Yes, Watson. Professor Moriarty is up to his old tricks again.
That's it. No, no, do not attempt to dissuade me, Holmes. It would be useless. I'm coming with you. Mary!
In Sherlock Holmes vs. Dracula, a play for radio by Glenn Dearman, from the writings of Dr. John H. Watson, as edited by Lauren D. Estelman, John Moffat was Sherlock Holmes, Timothy West, Dr. Watson, David March, Count Dracula, and Aubrey Woods, Professor Van Helsing. Parker was played by Michael Maloney, Bridger by John Hollis, Mrs. Barton by Catherine Parr, Mr. Caffin by Noel Howlett. Inspector Lestrade by Nicholas Courtney, Mary Watson by Teresa Stretfield, and The Vampire by Francis Jeter. The play was directed by Glenn Dearman.